everybody. Welcome back to the Deuce Retread. My name is Mike. What you are listening to now is part two of a three-part interview series with sex worker Jinx Liere. She's got all kinds of smart things to say about the show The Deuce and about representation of sex workers in entertainment. And in this episode, we're going to get into her Twitter. We call it a beef. I don't know. Maybe we call it a conversation. It was a little more heated at the beginning than the end. But anyway, her back and forth with Deuce star Maggie Gyllenhaal about the realities of representing sex workers and many, many other subjects. Thanks for joining us. If this is your first time listening to the Deuce Rethread, you might want to go back and listen to part one of the interview with Jinx, as well as my initial reaction podcast I do with Flavor Wire film editor Jason Bailey. Also, stick around. Part three of my interview with Jinx will be coming out next week. Thanks for joining us. We see in this show, the police are not a threat to them. You know, they're an inconvenience to the sex workers. And that seems really weird to me.
I have just, you know, in a show where I'm not sure how accurate so much of this is, that feels like one glaring inconsistency that combined with the erasure of trans women really just makes it clear this is essentially fantasy. Like, this is
it's at least cherry picking.
It's a very, like, the set pieces here, and then they had a bunch of the characters and they picked off all of the ones at the margins is really kind of what it feels like. Because
is fantasy. You're right. I'm sorry. That is cherry picking is fantasy. You're right. Yes.
And I mean, the thing is that, like, when it comes to the cops, it's not just, oh, hey, I've never heard any of my friends who have gotten arrested tell me about that time where the cops asked them what kind of Chinese food they wanted. It's like, I know people who have been arrested who in 2017 were thrown around the back of a van being driven on purpose to harm them before they were brought to a processing facility. And I know people who have been raped by cops, and that happens all the fucking time for cops to demand services of sex workers and then essentially be like, well, what the hell are you going to do about it?
Right. Right.
So, and that does affect the most vulnerable members of our community totally disproportionately. And because, like you said, nobody else is going to stand up for us. And it tends to, I mean, part of why I decided to just be pretty out about everything is I realized that I was outing myself left, right, and center by being like, hey, maybe let's not murder sex workers. Like, if I was talking about it in a neutral way at all, people were like, are you a stripper? And I'm like, well, yes, but like,
but also, that's like, not maybe, the point.
Maybe like, don't make dead hooker jokes. And people are like, she's definitely a stripper. So like,
right.
And even within that, even within sex work, there is, you know, there's divisions along race and class and gender and, like, you know, cisgender workers versus trans workers. And every possible version of identity politics coalesces, or at the very least appears, when you talk about sex work. Because, like, really, there are so many different people and so many different reasons why you can come to it. Many sex workers identify as queer and trans, even asexual. Poor, working class, unhoused, formerly incarcerated, disabled, undocumented, refugees, veterans, HIV positive people. Like, there are so many people who our society purposely excludes from more conventional work. If you don't have documentation because you're a refugee, if you or an undocumented immigrant, if you are physically disabled such that you cannot work a 40-hour a week job, if you have developmental or behavioral disabilities or illnesses or conditions that make it so that being a quote unquote productive citizen is not really something that you have access to, then that decision has really already been made for you that you're going to have to participate in some manner of alternative economy. And that's really what this show is about, is alternative economies.
Yeah.
Candy is meeting, she's like having lunch with that porn guy, and who is not even recording. And he mentions Thunder Thighs and he says, you'd be surprised, there's a market for big women. And it makes it so clear how much identity is literally translating into money and what these different niches are that people are filling and like what options they actually have access to. And so when you see a character like Abby, yeah, that piece of shit dude that she slept with took her money that her mom just handed her. But so she's going to have a very different experience of coming into this than we don't even know what Ruby's experience of being in the industry is, how she got there, who she goes home to. I think it would be really accurate if they showed a portrayal whereby she was being, you know, basically shorted by a customer and essentially treated differently than the white, like slimmer sex workers who are on the same stroll with her. Because in reality, like that is what happens, is that people are especially, you know, people are rude to sex workers, but if there is another reason or another way in which somebody is marginalized, it will always be exploited in sex work, whether that's just you don't make as much money, which is huge. This, you're talking about an industry where your body is literally how you survive, like how you earn your money. It has a huge impact on that. But just the way in which clients are interacting can be very, very different. And the respect that people are given can be very, very different. We talked about the cops. How about let's talk about Abby being taken out for a drink by that guy who is just like, oh, I get it. You're just trying to pick up speed because you go to school at NYU. Like,
yep.
Do you see that would have happened? Yeah, if Darlene had gotten caught like trying to buy speed, is that what would have happened? Like, no, absolutely not. And so it's depicting this, but I think again I come back to, you know, who is going to be talking about this and how are they going to be talking about it? And I think that is kind of how I end up so intractably unable to answer your question of would I just rather see it not covered at all? Is there a way to do it right? I don't know.
I wish I had a better answer. You know, I mean, I don't know if there is one, you know, that's the thing, because we're talking about what is probably the most nuanced, most thoughtful representation of sex work that I've seen on television, at least. I mean, there's been some movies, you know, obviously some books and stuff, but like, you know, there's an enormous amount of television that has passed me by, you know, but I think that, you know, they went out of their way to say, oh, we actually tried, you know, and we've interviewed some people, and you know, you were complaining about Maggie Gyllenhaal on Twitter, and she's like, educate me, I'm listening. And you did, you know, right? And you had that conversation with her. So I think it's like, it's interesting to remember that perspective of the fact that, like, we are talking about quite possibly as good as it gets. I certainly would say there's been a lot more nuance to the sex workers in this show than there has been in Game of Thrones, for fuck's sake. So,
oh, man, don't get me started on like sex workers in Game of Thrones. Like, that's not what I'm planning on spending the rest of my year doing.
In a best case scenario, there's still all these holes.
Yeah. And I mean, so many of the things that I'm talking about are issues that are so much bigger than sex work and that honestly, I'm not super qualified to talk about, but they're so tied to the realities of being a sex worker. And it's so the identities that you come to the work with so impact how that's going to go that like, it really comes down to, well, do we have good critical conversations on race in this country? Do we have good critical conversations on gender and transgender identities in this country? Like, no, not really. So then to add sex work on top of that is like kind of just asking for trouble. And I think that's right. Where my like, oh my God, yikes. Like, I'm alarmed that this is even on television thing came from. And so, yes, now we can talk about me and Maggie Gyllenhaal.
Well, I think, you know, I think the like this is just another aspect of this question of dealing with humanity and the idea that we don't talk about the humanity of each other. We don't talk about it that way nearly often enough. And that there's a difference between, you know, having a kink or a thing that you like or whatever the case may be, whatever your world was like in middle school that is still somehow wrapped up in your brain, right? That is one thing. But if we are not talking about each person and recognizing their individual humanity, even if you judge them or can't recognize or empathize with their experience, whatever the case may be, you have to understand that that person has their own self and there are intractable elements of that self that should be respected, whether you're talking to them or about them or thinking about them, whatever the case may be. And if we are incapable still of doing that in our personal lives, I think that we are then also, it's very hard for us to do that in our entertainment consumption or our consumption of the news, or because this is the thing, we take in what's happening with our president in the same way that we take in the deuce, which is on television, right? Or you read an article where somebody talks about something that they saw, you know, where they talk about politics, things that are happening in the real world. We consume all of these things through the same methods. And so if we can't recognize the individual humanity of real people to whom real things are really happening to, it's, I don't see how we can, how one person cannot do that, but somehow manage to do that in their entertainment. And I think when it does happen in their entertainment, it's either sneaky or by design. And how we get to the pretty white girl being the star of, you know, of all the stories that are supposedly worth telling is that that is somehow a way that people think that they can like sneakily create some empathy, you know? Mm-hmm. And I don't,
exactly.
I think that's bullshit. I think the whole philosophy behind that is bullshit. I think that what people connect to is stories and situations and emotions that they have felt in some way, but they're not comfortable thinking about or talking about how they've felt these emotions in their own way. And so then we explore them through other things. And I think that that the race of the character, for fuck's sake, is way less important than what that character is experiencing, which is a reflection of their humanity. But we don't talk about it that way, you know? And like the idea that we can't talk about it that way, to me, is a major problem in our social conversations and in our conversations about entertainment, you know, because you like, I think that that's one of the things that is that I'm learning. I learn a lot from you. I talk about I talk about you in one of the other episodes where I say, I talk about a conversation we had. I talk about
totally,
you in one of the...
You can tell that I didn't actually listen to all of it.
No. This one hasn't come out yet. No. This one hasn't come out yet. So it's fine. So you just called yourself out. hey. I talk about how a conversation that you and I had off mic about the character Bubbles in The Wire and the idea of treating sex workers and drug addicts kind of in the same, treating them in the same, and you, what you said to me was, they are treated as if they deserve the bad things that happen to them, and that that is the thing that links them, right? And then exactly. I went on to say that on the podcast and talk about it as like a revelation I had. And then as it was coming out of my mouth, I was like, no, that's not a thing I fucking figured out. Jinx said that to me. And so I finished saying that thing as if I had thought of it. And then I credited you afterwards because I realized. So like this, you know, I think these conversations are enlightening to me because what you keep talking about is, you know, aspects of humanity, of the individual humanity, both of the real people that were at Stonewall and the characters that are in the show and the fact that we're not seeing, like, you know, you keep going back to this idea of, and the fact that that seems to be lacking no matter what, like even in this best case scenario, you know, and thinking about the show from that perspective, like it feels like there is some responsibility that is just roundly ignored. And it's unfortunate because when these shows work for me, and I think not just for me, but also for me, is when they don't ignore those things, when they do give us those complicated things, when they do give us, you know, things that we can't just like wrap up by the end of the hour. That's what invests me anyway, you know, and it seems like we're still kind of stuck in this like 1930s marketing mindset around a lot of this stuff, and breaking through just like the fact that we haven't even been able to break through the visual racial aspect of it yet doesn't suggest good things for the deeper psychological issues.
No, it doesn't. And the fact that, you know, what's shorthand for, oh, how do we humanize this character? Like you said, make her like a pretty white girl. And so what's then calling her humanity into question is, oh, she's a sex worker. So that right there says a lot about what whiteness means in our culture and what being a sex worker means in our culture. And the reason why the fact that her being a sex worker and all of these characters who are sex workers being sex workers and portraying those stories is relevant because, and I'm always going to come back to this, is it has real world consequences. And one of the things that I thought was so telling, which was like almost a throwaway line, when the cops are in their little meeting, obviously you can tell I'm a huge fan of Cops and know lots of their terminology. All cops are bastards. So there's this one line where the dude's like reading off the list of what happened the night before, and he says two rapes,
one complainant, known pros. So who's to say?
One complainant, known pros. So who's to say?
Commercial robberies. Holy shit. Fellas, watch the bodegas, all right?
And it was a throwaway, and that's the right word for it, in a million ways.
And it's a throwaway line in between so many other things that were, like, being said. And it was also, like, a throwaway, like, each of the crimes that they were talking about, they're like, we don't know, the dude's on the loose, we don't know what the hell is going on, like, whatever, like, you know, somebody's like, oh, do we have any leads? And the dude like laughs at him. But that was throwaway in every sense of the word, in that like violence against us is not a big deal because we are disposable. And that happens in real life. I am from Philadelphia, which also probably explains what we're about to have to talk about with me and Maggie Gyllenhaal, as far as me being a little pugnacious. But I was around last year for the race for DA, district attorney, which is an elected position. I did not know. It's very important. Local elections, very important. And there was a woman who was running named Teresa Cardenai, who had been a municipal judge for years and had faced not enough, in my opinion, but some backlash for a decision that she made in 2007, which is basically that there was a sex worker who was gang raped by four men at gunpoint, who made the decision to come forward to the police to try to hold those men accountable. So let's talk about that for a second, because when I say that criminalization creates violence, this is one of the things that I mean, is if you are in a situation where by reporting something that happened to you, you incriminate yourself, what the fuck are you going to do? You're probably not going to do that. So like, it's already hard enough to be somebody who is coming forward as a survivor of sexual violence in our culture, in any culture, a very difficult thing to endure. I myself am a survivor of sexual violence. I have talked to the police about it. I have gone through multiple channels. I have tried to deal with it in many different ways, and it's never fucking fun. It is always traumatizing. It is always horrifying. It is always something that we basically build shame into. But then to add on top of that, the fact that you will be admitting also that you are engaging in criminal activity by doing that, that's a huge risk, and that keeps people silent. So not only are the cops a source of violence against us, but then we don't want to go to the cops. First of all, you're never, there's no fucking point in reporting a cop to the cops. You know, this cops raping sex workers is not a bug. It's a feature. It is exactly how that is set up to work. And that system works very well for them. Obviously, and I can't believe I'm even saying this, not every single cop has raped a sex worker. Not every single precinct has this issue. There's a lot of places that like sex work is literally not even on their radar. But there's a lot of places, especially in lower income areas of cities, where this is an issue, where this is happening every single weekend, every single day. And when this woman decided to come forward to say, hey, these four men, one of them whose full name I have, gang raped me at gunpoint, this judge, Teresa Cardenai, chose to only charge them with theft of services as opposed to assault, weapon, sexual assault. Oh man, dude, it gets so much worse, because when somebody asked her about that, she said, she really just doubled down, because she said, I cannot charge those men with anything other than theft of services, because to charge them with sexual assault would, quote, minimize true rape cases and demean women who are really. So minimize rape cases and demeans women who are really raped. So what is the implication of that?
Yeah, you can't rape a sex worker.
Exactly.
You can't rape your wife. Right?
Exactly. And so there's sex workers, and then there's women who can really be raped. And those are two different things. And that is exactly what that cop is saying when he says two rapes, one complainant, known pros, so who's to say. And that is an issue that comes up regularly in the lives of sex workers, is what are we to do in a situation where it is not legally in our interest to admit to how we found ourselves in that position? Plus, who the fuck is going to believe us or care? Because you know what somebody's going to say? You know what people always say to rape victims is like, well, why were you there? Why were you wearing that? What were you doing? Why didn't you leave? Why didn't you fight harder? So all of that times a million is
right,
what
and none of which should be relevant. Like, how the fuck you got in that room is irrelevant at that point. Like,
so,
why would that? Yeah.
And this is not a thing I've ever talked about before, and I wasn't really planning on bringing it up, but like, I have never been physically harmed by a client other than like when I was a stripper, this dude slapped my ass so hard once that I quit. That was literally my last night as a stripper. This dude slapped my ass really, really hard. I was like, fuck this. I'm so tired of this. I can't handle it. And my knees sound like creaky bones. So I'm done. Tap out. But I have been in the position of having been assaulted by somebody who knew that I was a sex worker, knew that I was in the physical location that I was in because of sex work, and knew that I would be powerless to do anything about it because I would incriminate myself if I came forward.
And you knew, like, it was clear that was part of the plan.
Oh my God, yeah. So, and there's,
I feel, you know, so naive sometimes. Like, I have, you know what I mean? I don't know. Like, I just, yeah, go ahead. I'm sorry.
And we see that in the show, right? Because there's the guy that Cece stabs for Lori.
Yes.
Lori, yes. Yeah. Okay, so he's like, this dude is no fucking cop. And he points out that his clothes are too nice. And then he opens a bag in the back and he's got like rope and a baseball bat or something else really murdery looking.
Yeah, duct tape and shit. Yep.
Yeah, exactly. And that is absolutely a thing that happens. And that was absolutely what happened in my case. And, you know, I am willing to speak really candidly about this because people don't get what a big deal it is to go to the police and tell them that you're engaging in this activity that is not only criminal, but universally detested and universally denigrated. And so in every other way in that situation, I was like your perfect victim. Oh my God. I don't think I've ever like had more perfect hair and makeup. And I was staying in a very fancy hotel. I was just like your, like most in all ways other than the fact that I was a sex worker, pristine victim. I was drugged. I have no memory of the incident. But even when I figured out who the fuck it was who did it, which by the way, it was a client who I was, this one time, this guy was pissing me off and he was like, hey, you know, why are you in such a bad mood today? And I was like, let me tell you a fucking thing. And I described this man who assaulted me in very, like very few details. And he finished the description and he pulled up his Facebook and he was like, it's this guy. And so I know exactly who it is. I know where he lives and I can't do anything about it. I definitely can't do any kind of like crazy, like, vigilante shit now that I'm going on record as saying this. So perhaps this is why I'm telling this story today. But you know, I had all the facts. I was in so many ways just like, I was just a girl sitting in a bar. He didn't even drug my champagne. He drugged my water because I wasn't looking, because I was holding my champagne really close to my chest because I didn't want to fucking get drugged, because I didn't want to get assaulted, because I was trying to be smart. And I ended up in a position where the very first thing I would have had to say if I reported to the police would be to explain why I was in that hotel room under the name of a man that I like hardly even knew. Like, I literally didn't know the guy's real last name. So like,
right.
That's a very difficult position to be in legally. Oh, also, I woke up and Trump was being inaugurated. So like,
that's
talk about the literal like worst day of your life. So yeah, this is like reality that even I, as like, I'm, and I hope that I don't sound dumb pointing this out multiple times, but like, I have a very particular experience of this, and it still includes violence, and it still is about the context of the work, not the work itself. And honestly, like, as fucked up as the thing that was to have happened and survived, I could not have asked for a more perfect anecdote to fight people when they tell me
right.
sex work should be criminalized and it should remain criminalized or it should be legalized or whatever, because there's a big difference between legalization and decriminalization. Decriminalization is widely regarded by sex workers, by allies, by advocates. Actually, by Amnesty International released a report in 2015 called Sex Worker Rights or Human Rights. You can go look it up and read it. They're on our side. And that is just very practically the fastest, most effective way to improve the safety and well-being of sex workers globally. But we won't do that because sex workers need to be punished for the choices that we made. And if something bad happens to us, it's our fault because we made those choices.
And as soon as you decriminalize the sex work, then that by its very nature criminalizes the rape and or whatever other, you know, what the assault, the just the stealing. I mean, the theft of services, like if that is actually, you know, the actual real issue in the moment. I mean, whatever the case may be, when you decriminalize the sex work, then all of the other normal laws of business and social interaction can be held to apply.
And that's why it's
like
so
it would be
wild.
An improvement.
And people are like, we just have to come down harder on trafficking laws. I'm like, look, it's already illegal to rape somebody. It's already right. illegal to beat somebody up. So right. like, how about instead of creating new laws that, by the way, trafficking is like the new war on drugs as far as essentially being like a dragnet for low-income communities of color, but that's a whole other story. Right. That is very much related to gentrification, which is something that the show does touch on, and that has a very long history related to sex work. But it's not realistic to think that adding more penalties for doing the work that apply to people who are doing it consensually would in any way protect us.
Right. Oh, man. All right. My brain grows when I talk to you. And I felt that way already about listening to you on podcast Winterfell, but like, this is some whole other shit. I mean, this is, you know, watering my feeble mind. How can people, I mean, like I feel like I have learned a lot about the sex worker community and about the trans community, those two specifically, from Twitter. You know, and obviously not just Twitter, but then you follow things that, you know, that people are talking about.
Fall
right?
down
but,
the rabbit hole of.
Yeah. You know,
as aggressively.
I've learned a lot. I've learned a lot. And it has been very valuable for me. And I think that's one interesting thing about platforms like Twitter is that you can educate yourself privately without, you know, and at a pace that you can be comfortable without going and asking people to do the work for you, you know, without. And so once you
Very
are
important.
Actually interacting, you can have a little bit of nuance around that, you know. So I think we've talked pretty effectively about sex worker representation in our fiction. But you also have some interesting things to say about, you know, journalism and the Sandra Washington character. The Amsterdam news reporter in the show, and the idea of interacting with sex workers as an educational tool, which we need to do, but we need to do that in, you know, in particular ways. You should read a little bit before you just get on Twitter flapping your fucking stupid face, right?
So, yeah, and I mean, that was kind of what I had never... So I'll let me back this up by saying I have been on Twitter for like a year and a half ish. Mm-hmm. So I am still very new to the world of Twitter, but there was one thing that I knew, which is that you don't at celebrities unless you actually want them to pay attention to you, because I had definitely known that was like for like mid-level people, for like, you know, and that even that sounds like really oppressive and like hierarchical. But as far as like, you know, people with like huge, huge followings, I knew that like you don't like at a professor who you just heard like a lecture from unless you actually want to engage with them, or like
right.
an actor in an independent movie that has been seen by like 14 people. Like I got that like there was kind of this middle ground of like, you don't know that person, don't fucking talk to them. But then right. I kind of figured that there was a point of like, if you're like a household name, nobody's ever gonna, you're not gonna see that. Like who actually checks, what celebrity checks their own Twitter?
Yeah,
but
yeah.
apparently the answer is Maggie Gyllenhaal, because or her assistant was like, hey, you need to look at this. Because I had some feelings immediately upon seeing this show was going to be happening, and I kept them to myself. by which I mean bitched about it with every single sex worker I knew. And it wasn't until I started seeing some of the press about the show that I was like, all right, this is my moment. I'm going to scream into the void. And maybe people who are looking at Maggie Gyllenhaal's Twitter, who are not Maggie Gyllenhaal, will understand that sex workers have an opinion on this. I really honestly am definitely ascribing way too much thought to this, because the actual tweet that I sent was basically like, at M. Gyllenhaal can fucking fight me. This is some of the most ignorant shit I've ever read. So like, I'm acting like I'm like, you know, so thoughtful and like deciding how I want to engage with this. I really wasn't. I was basically just like, you know what? This was really pissing me off, because what I saw was a quote from her doing press for the show. And I want to name again, I get that they consulted real life sex workers. I understand that. But then in the press tour, I just, every single thing I found her saying about playing this character, I found upsetting. And the first thing that I took issue with was her saying, there's this fake power structure for prostitutes. This is a quote. There's this fake power structure for prostitutes where you go, I'm in charge. I'm going to set the price. I'm going to set the boundaries. And yet you're alone in a room with someone that could rape you if they wanted to. So that in and of itself was enough to set me off, because this is a really typical civilian double standard. This is true of so many jobs. Like, name a job where you're never alone in a room with someone that could rape you, because we know people of any gender can commit sexual violence towards people of any gender. So like, what job do you have where you're never alone in a room with someone? Like, that is such a typical way to frame sex work is inherently more dangerous than other industries. But we know that that's not the reality of sexual violence. So what this is actually getting at is the danger of criminalization, not the work itself. So it's kind of, you know, I want to like give her credit for this being smarter than I think it was initially intended mm-hmm. to be, which is that it's the position I found myself in, having been alone in a room with somebody who did rape me, and I didn't have the ability to legally move forward with that without incriminating myself. So it's really unfair to be lobbing that charge against this particular way of earning money when that is such a common experience of humanity, to be alone in a room with a person.
Right,
the other
right.
thing that I really took issue with was her saying, that's troubling. And I think that requires an amount of dissociation that makes it impossible to keep your mind intact. This really made my blood boil, because A, it's assuming dissociation. It's definitely making assumptions about mental health and the impact that this job and any sex work, like any sex work position, no pun intended, might have. And I think this is so particularly wild coming from somebody who plays other people professionally. I really just had to be like, is it confusing for you when you play other humans? Do you find yourself dissociating because you're an actress? And not only do I assume you tend to be alone in rooms with men sometimes, but also like you're literally pretending to be another person. Whereas, like, you know, as workers, people can have whatever relationship to their work persona imaginable, really. Some people think of themselves as like an entirely different person. A lot of people are just like, I have a different name when I'm doing this, but I'm still, you know, gonna act totally the same way. A lot of us are somewhere in between where it's like, okay, well, I'm gonna, you know, be my typical sarcastic, nerdy self, but also maybe I'll like leave out some of this other stuff that I would want to say because it's not profitable to be expressing anti-capitalist opinions during a transactional interaction generally. Although I definitely do have clients who are very much supportive of me being an anarchist. So shout out to y'all because you're probably listening.
Well, I think this is like, I think this is a really like, this is one of the things that, this is one thing that I learned from listening to sex workers on Twitter, is that the disassociation thing is something that I think is somewhat, it's definitely something I experienced, which is this idea of thinking like, well, if you just were going to fuck anybody, you would have to be able to like take your head to a different place sometimes, because some of those people aren't going to be the kind of people you'd want to fuck. There's a million problems just in that idea, in that conception of the job, right? But also, it didn't occur to me to think about it as a, in terms of the moment-to-moment experience, which is that even if you're doing full-service work and you are like actively in the moment, it's not about the sex worker's experience ever. And they are in every moment concerning themselves with the experience of the client and their needs in a moment to moment way. And this was a mind blowing thing for me to think about, in the same way that I think about being a, you know, a stripper and making small talk with these drunk fucking morons, which is the sixth level of hell in my, for as a social experience for me, right? And this is the same thing, only taken to obviously a different level. But how can you disassociate yourself from something, from a service related, it just like, that's not how that works. You don't disassociate yourself from the people at the table if you're a waiter, or from whatever the fuck your job is. Like, you're doing it moment to moment. I am editing video, and like, if I'm spacing off, I'm not editing video. I don't know what I'm doing. I might have just like have some shit playing and I just am staring at it and acting like I'm like really trying to make a deep decision about the footage or whatever, but really it's just playing and I'm thinking about something else. But that means I'm not doing the work. So if you're doing the work, you can't be disassociated. That's not what doing work is.
Yeah, and I think that, like, there's also, I think culturally we have a misunderstanding of what disassociation is, and kind of this idea that it's just basically just zoning out. But this is a very particular mental and behavioral health term that is being used super casually. And like, yeah, like a lot of workers compartmentalize aspects of their personality or like their own sexual desires or whatever in those moments. But like, and some of us experience dissociation, but what isn't okay is to be saying, here is a mental health phenomenon that I, as an actress, have decided is definitely happening when this person in this other industry that I'm playing mm-hmm. a role in is experiencing. And particularly the language of intact is like, there are so many cliches and like, just tropes about sex workers being broken and being fallen and being you know, a shambles and a disaster and all of these things that are about like falling apart and not being a whole person. Like the language is literally making it clear that we are not being considered as full people. So to use the language of intact is really hurtful. And she did, you know, kind of come back when I started saying like, hey, fight me. and she said, but it wasn't really better at first, because she said, yes, that's a misquote. I do imagine that level of dissociation can make it very difficult to keep your mind intact. So the word that changed there was difficult from impossible. Mm-hmm. But mm-hmm. I did meet women who seemed to manage it. So that's just like an extremely stigmatizing way to talk about mental health, to talk about sex work, to make assumptions about the way that those things interact. And I'm not saying that there aren't sex workers who are on like a spectrum of ability with respect to mental and behavioral health, because like I myself like have, I like identify along that. So I'm not denying that, but it's also really inaccurate to say that mental health is always, poor mental health is a result of doing sex work. A lot of us come to sex work because we have various disabilities and because it is more practical to do, you know, X amount of hours of work 3 days a week on the weekends than it is to be going to a job where your body has to be in a place for 10 hours a day. So to be speaking about these really big topics that are extremely relevant to issues of how we as sex workers are perceived, because you're essentially calling us crazy and broken. And I have a problem with that. Because I feel like it, you know, if you're trying to be portraying this like, oh, like empowered, I hate this word, like when it comes to talking about sex work, but if you're trying to portray an empowered sex worker, why are you sitting here giving press interviews where you're alluding to our like broken psyches? Like that's so rude. And the thing that really pissed me off was that one of her responses to that was, hey, you know, So I did meet women who seemed to manage it. And then she wrapped up that tweet with, and BTW, I play one on #TheDeuce, #Candy. So like, first of all, stop with the hashtag. I'm literally trying to engage you about like
a issue. Fucking commercial.
Yeah. So it's also really funny because I didn't know that her character's name was Candy. And I got this tweet as I was sitting there, I think rewatching Game of Thrones with same sex worker friend that I was talking about earlier, this is her work name rather. So we found that especially hilarious, but I had to respond like, is it a fake power structure when you as an actress find yourself alone with a coworker? Are sex workers the only people at risk for sexual violence? Absolutely not. And by the way, I play one IRL. Like, why is that even relevant? The fact that you play one on TV is exactly what I'm calling out as being problematic in terms of you not having a right to speak on our mental health. So I had never had a celebrity really acknowledge me in general at all. One time David Sedaris signed my Kindle, but other than that,
that counts though. That's fucking pretty good. I mean, I'm not really an autograph hound, but that's pretty good.
And he signed it. It's no iPad, because he's David Sedaris, and I don't know what I expected. So I'm sure he's not listening to this, but just in case he is, David Sedaris, that really hurt my feelings, and you used the wrong it's. So.
Oh my god.
Bring it back to what we're actually talking about.
That was my favorite diversion in podcast history, though. I'm sorry.
It's really common for actresses and people who are peripherally involved with sex work, in that they're either representing our stories, or they get involved with an anti-trafficking organization that is trying to, you know, save us from ourselves. It's very, I can only speak for myself, but as a sex worker, I'm very tired of seeing celebrities take a stance on something that they so clearly don't understand. And this I found really disappointing, because I had, you know, my initial level of ire and just like outrage that the show was even being made. And then I was like, you know what, I'm just going to forget about it. And then I was like, you know what, maybe it won't even be that bad. And then the first fucking thing I see any actor or anybody related to the show talking about is like these incredibly offensive statements that are making sweeping generalizations that, you know, really play into stereotypes about sex workers. So the thing that just really bothered me about this was that it's part of a very long history of people who are not sex workers having very strong opinions on the lives of sex workers, and those people having much more influence over the policies and attitudes that shape our lives than we do. And to her credit, Maggie Gyllenhaal, bless her heart, she eventually basically said, like, hey, I get it. So the actual tweet was, I could never represent all sex workers. I'm just playing one woman. I don't want to fight, which made me feel really bad. Also, I looked up how tall she is, and she could definitely take me. I don't want to fight. I'm on your side. School me. I'm listening. And I was just like blown away by that response, because yeah. Obviously have never had a Twitter fight with like an actual celebrity, but I've definitely never had one that ended even like a basic human conversation, person to person with a peer. It's very uncommon for somebody on this subject to say like, hey, I'm listening. I'm like ready to open my viewpoint on this. And like, your perspective is valuable. So yeah. That means a lot. And she actually, even bothered to retweet a SoundCloud file of myself and a comrade of mine speaking at the Philadelphia Women's March, which was the day after I was assaulted, by the way. So I got to speak about criminalization and stigmatization and all of the things that we're talking about now, except for instead of those being things that were, you know, concepts that I was very familiar with, it was suddenly like, hey, this is a thing that happened to me and why I can't do anything about it right now. So it was a very surreal experience to be talking about that, and just frankly, to be a sex worker, a self-proclaimed sex worker standing in front of 40,000 people out on the parkway. But she ended up sharing that speech, which was really, really cool. Feel free to check it out. I definitely have a link to
put it on in the show notes.
Well, yeah. It's just like tinyurl.com/PRUAWM17, because it's Philly Red Umbrella Alliance Women's March 17. That honestly, if that hadn't happened, I would not be having this conversation with you right now, Mike. Like, we would not meet until I was like, oh, I want to talk about sex workers on Game of Thrones. Fuck the deuce. Yeah. I'll never watch that dumpster fire of a show. But she said that, and that really just, it made me a lot more open to actually seeing what the show was about.
Thank you for listening to The Deuce on the DVR Podcast Network. You can check us out at dvrpodcast.com or on Twitter at @DVRPodcast. You can email Mike and Jason at thedeucedvr@gmail.com or follow them on Twitter at @thedeucedvr.